Good evening. This is Off the Bookshelf with your host, Deborah Herman. Tonight, I have a wonderful guest. I'm very excited. We have Dr. Richard Moss. Do you still relate to that moniker?
No, I mean...
Because you don't
Thanks,
indicate...
Deborah. I'm fine. Yes, I went to medical school and I practiced medicine, but no, I don't... It's been a long time since I changed my careers, a long, long time. So Richard Moss is fine. On my books, the publishers like me to put doctor. I think they think it has more panache, but in my daily life, I don't use it.
That's what I thought. Yeah. But again, being respectful and also being in publishing, that is true. They'll want you to use that. But I'm very excited to have you on the show for many reasons. I believe the universe sometimes organizes things far beyond what I can do in my practical day-to-day life, because unbeknownst to me, when I scheduled you and when we had talked way back when, right. I'm actually having surgery on Wednesday.
Oh, wow.
So
what kind of surgery?
I'm having back surgery.
Oh, my goodness.
I know. Okay. And so I was reading with great interest your book. You know, I'm jumping ahead a little bit for those of for the members of the audience who are not familiar with your work. But you're an amazing healer, and your work is all about, you know, your newest book is called Inside Out Healing. And it just made me kind of laugh to see the relevance, because we all draw into our lives the things that we need to hear and the things that we need to learn. So I want to back up a little bit. You are known as the maestro of deep work for essential change. And
I would love to drop the word maestro, but my publicist likes it. I'm a very good teacher, but with a lot of experience. But maestro is just a little bit out there, I think.
Well, when I watch some of your YouTube videos, which are very enjoyable, you know, your persona is so much different than I can see where the publicist came into the picture and what your personal energy is. And certainly you seem to be very humble and devoted to your work and your calling, which after so many years as a medical doctor, it certainly was a calling. Tell us a little bit about that. How did you describe a little bit about the work that you're doing now and how you switched from being a mainstream medical doctor into this world of alternative healing?
Well, the work I'm doing now and have been doing for 36 years, and of course it evolved, is at this point in all over Europe, South America, North America, Australia, New Zealand, and I haven't gone to Asia yet, but it's usually retreat work, and it might be 3 days or 4 days or 10 days. I work with individuals privately. That's not my main form of work, but through Skype you can work with people from all over the world, and I do. And the point of my work is if it's the longer retreat, it's to help a person deeply reset the kind of inner sense of connection to a much deeper, much healthier, much more balanced, spacious, alive place. And from once that's established, then it becomes possible to be able to sustain it, not exactly as you would it having been in a retreat, but to be able to recognize when you go out of balance much more quickly and bring yourself back to balance much more easily. And by balance, I mean, in my work, I help people stop leaving the present moment in such a way as to be so captured by their thoughts that the thinking continues to produce emotional distress, emotional unhappiness. And I teach people how to engage threatening feelings or moods that sometimes we can't even explain where they come from, in very creative ways, so that in a sense they become ways of being initiated more deeply into your potential as a human being, and into more complete consciousness, and into a, and particularly we are quite multidimensional. We're not just, you know, intellect and flesh. We have an energetic dynamic, and we're connected to everyone in that dynamic. We're connected to what the depth psychologists would call the unconscious, or the deeper self, and in spirituality would be called the true self or spirit. And these things, we language them in different ways, but they're very real, and they...
Yeah, absolutely. You know, I know this is probably a cliche way of saying it, but just looking at some of the chapters in your new book, it's almost like don't believe what you think.
Well, don't believe what you think if you're in your body and you think a thought. I'm going to give you an example of a thought that I don't think anymore. I don't think thoughts like I need to work harder, I should try harder, or I would. Because the moment I have that thought, I feel my body get tight. And I know, I believe, or I've chosen to live my life by a deep sense that anything that creates even the slightest degree of suffering in me is not meant to be there. Now, I understand your back hurts. By the way, mine does too. So we have a lot of things we could talk about. I too have been debating whether to have surgery or not. But that's not the important issue right now. It was interesting to me when I heard you say that synchronicity was there.
Oh, I know. I can't believe it. I scheduled this before I even knew this was coming up. Yeah. And please go on.
I did surgery once before, so this time I'm opting to try to work with exercise therapy. And musculoskeletal rebalancing. It's a much, much slower process. But I have been making enough headway for me to believe I'm going to be able to avoid doing surgery. It's, you know, a bulging disc and degenerative facets and things like that. But let's get back to the work that people are listening to us about. So I do that kind of work. And the reason I left medicine was simply because most human suffering is not physical. Most human suffering is psychological. And emotional, and even more than that, most of it is relationship-oriented. It's between spouses, it's between parents and children, it's between brothers and sisters, it's between neighbors, not to mention, of course, between nations and religions. But I've traveled, maybe 20-something different countries, there's still a lot more countries to visit, but there are people who are in pain, physical pain. And I haven't gone deep into, at least I have not worked deep in, you know, the most poor areas of developing countries. I mean, I've been in developing countries, but usually the people who participate with me are not the poor. And no question, when there's poverty, there's suffering, and it's very real. But even there, I wonder how much the suffering within the individuals happens between people. And more than it is just from lack of food or lack of electricity or lack of what most of us take for granted is the very luxurious comfort of comfortable housing we have in the developed world and here in the United States. So my focus is on what is it that creates this conflict? And my answer to that is in the book that we're talking about, Inside Out Healing. Very clear, very practical, very, very helpful. And it has to do with the thoughts or beliefs, I often call them stories, that we tell ourselves about other people or about ourselves. Or we believe the past is real, but in fact the brain reinvents the past again and again. So the past that you're remembering today, if you wrote it down, if you could take a picture of it, like a screensaver picture on your computer, and you could, a year from now, look at that same memory, look at that same, and take a screenshot, and then compare them, you'd discover they're different.
Support what you're saying in your book, you say that you've lived through challenging times yourself, as most people on the spiritual path do. Somehow we have to, you know, we're learning everything that we teach. And often some of us, as I think you're alluding to, maybe choose the hard way until you had this great epiphany about doing it a different way. And you acknowledge that it's distressing. And then you said in your book, but I know that most of my suffering dissolves when I come home to my aware self in the present moment. From this centered place, the kinds of stories the mind creates that frighten you and make you a victim cease to have power. Patterns of suffering that are self-generated become apparent, and you feel empowered to make healthy changes. I just wanted to quote you to you.
Oh, that's good.
Because I know that sometimes when you write and then you go back and you say, wow, that's exact, you know, even though you're quite articulate, I just wanted to tell you that, you know, for anyone who does read your book, it's very clear how you lay out this process of the way, you know, that our thoughts become so real that they can manifest things.
Well, they certainly instantaneously manifest something in our bodies. I mean, there's a lot of people that want to manifest money or success or the right partner and all of that. And I don't have much interest in that level of spirituality. I'm much more concerned with what does a person manifest the minute they have a thought like, I need to try harder, or I'm not lovable, or he doesn't care about me, or, you know, or she doesn't trust me. These thousands of thoughts we have each day are like dropping poison into the body. The body immediately secretes cortisol, stress hormones, neuropeptides that say to it, oh, I'm in danger, oh, I'm not well, oh, I'm not sick, oh, I'm not, oh, I am sick, oh, I'm not safe.
Absolutely.
And if we can address that, which we have to address moment by moment in the present moment, then we get healthy, and believe it or not, that's when we manifest happiness and success and deep intimacy and a good relationship. So you have to start with yourself, and you have to start in the present moment.
Well,
because there is nothing else.
It certainly makes so much sense. I do want to remind our audience that this is a live call-in show, although we're going to probably get caught up further in the discussion. I'm so grateful to have Richard Moss on the show this week. The phone number is 888-627-6008. That's 888-627-6008.
Oh, I really hope people do call in, because I think it can get much more interesting when we're really talking to someone about something.
Oh, absolutely.
They're living.
I can think of so many people just off the top of my head. Sometimes people are shy, so don't be shy. You have the great opportunity to talk to Richard Moss, who is a wonderful best-selling author. The testimonials on the back of this book are absolutely amazing, from all of the great thought leaders and spiritual teachers in the country today. I do want to say that you dedicated your book to my all-time most influential teacher, Dr. Brewjoy, and I was just so taken aback because reading his book Joy's Way was one of the first. It was one of the first books that helped me understand a little bit of this other thing that we may call, you know, the spiritual path, or just it opened up my awareness. Did
Wonderful.
You know Dr. Joy?
Very, very well. We met in 1975. We worked together on and off for years. I actually helped proof the manuscript for Joy's Way. I was around him when he was working on it. And I was with him. He died in December of 2009, I believe. I was with him for 3 days in October, just the two of us. He knew he was very sick. He knew he was probably dying. At that point, he was not in too much suffering. And we had profound conversations, just profound conversations. Yeah, you're right. I knew him well, and he was a very important influence for me, because when I met him, I was still a young physician. And you were asking me why I made that change. Well, the answer was, something was awakening in me that was calling me to things like meditation and spiritual literature, and I had some kind of experiences, awakening, quickening experiences. And I was seeking. And Brew and I crossed paths in 75 when he was giving a talk in L.A. at the Center for the Healing Arts. And we chatted for a little while, and 3 days later he calls me in my medical office and says, I'm about to do my very first retreat at a place called Sky High Ranch. Would you like to come? And I said, okay. So in September of 1975, I believe, I spent 14 days or 17 days with Brew.
Well,
the very first gathering he ever made. And so he was one of my important teachers. He taught me about sensing energy, seeing energy, and also thinking out of the box in a big way.
It made me not feel crazy, even though some people would still probably argue the point. You know, reading his book, especially when there was, back then, there was so little that was being written. I mean, to find an esoteric type of book, you had to go, I used to have to go to this little house, you know, you felt like you were doing something criminal. And,
yeah.
You know, to
not
find
that many
books that, right?
Yeah, and not many authors are Phi Beta Kappa and have gone at the Mayo Clinic and or like myself too, gone to the best schools, graduated with honors from school, you know, in medicine. You know, and then we make this change to the inner work, the transformational work, this soul journey.
Well, Richard, at that time, I'm telling you, I feel like this is such a full circle blessing for me, especially that you knew Dr. Joy, because I was a lawyer at the time. I had finished law school. I was like a little yuppie, and all of a sudden, I, you know, the energy from the hands, and I started having these visions, and his book helped me know that it was real, and that it wasn't my imagination, and I understand, again, synchronicity. Plus, you went to Stony Brook, and I grew up in Smithtown.
Oh, wow. So, okay. Yeah. We were practically neighbors.
I know. Yeah. So thank you so much. I don't want to digress from your wonderful work, but I just wanted to, you know, give that honor to Dr. Joy, and it's such a blessing that you were able to work with him and then continue your own work. And, you know, your books, I'm hoping to – now I know I want to read go backwards into the path of your journey to look at some of your earlier books. You also have a great deal on YouTube. I want to mention your website is, just richardmoss.com. My kids always kid me because I say .com, you know, like it's some important thing. But and if they're listening, they're going to laugh. So so people can find more information about, you know, the work that you do. I know we can't give it full justice in a short radio show. But you also talk in this Inside Out Healing book about basic mistakes. And first you talk about believing your own thoughts, again, those instilled in us by family and society, puts you into conflict with yourself and with each other and with life. And the second is that we are afraid of so many of our feelings, and in fleeing the feelings, our egos close off to our inner life and the wellspring for true health. So what is the difference between emotions and feelings? And because a spiritual teacher once said that humans to some extent need to overcome their emotions, but that's not the same as the feelings that we feel. Am I correct?
Exactly. So we'll think of us this way. As little babies, we feel. We have sensation. We can get very upset if there's a bad energy between our parents. We sense if our mothers are unhappy or anxious or afraid. You know, it's true that the first child for most mothers, they have anxiety, and that has an effect on a kid. By the time they've had their second or certainly their third child, you know, they have so much more relaxation, just like experienced midwives have far fewer complications than new midwives, because they know how not to create anxiety around them. So the I lost my train of thought here. What did you ask me again? Oh, differentiating,
no,
differentiating
emotions
and feelings. Okay, so we are thinking beings and we are feeling beings, and it's two different modes of consciousness. And so feeling is normal and natural, to feel pain because someone near you is in pain, to have compassion, to have empathy, to be delighted by the giggle of a child, to be concerned by the cry of a child, to just sort of light up on a full moon or a sunset or a sunrise, or I sailed across the Atlantic Ocean in a 48 foot boat with five other men, and when the dolphins came, thoughts that made us. I mean, the dolphins were just playing and diving around the bow and under the boat, and we were just in a state of delight every single time. No thought that created that. So now that's feeling. Now there's a category of feeling that is emotion, but the difference is this, and it's a very, very important difference. Emotion is a feeling, or let's say emotion is a sensation that's created by a thought. So if when you say, he doesn't love me, and you get angry or you get sad, you can't say that, you would say, I feel sad or I feel angry, but it is an emotion created by the thought. So that's why spiritual teachers say, throughout time, have said we have to take responsibility for our emotions. There is probably a clean form of anger that sets a boundary, but it has no lingering effect. It's not fueled by resentment. Resentment, bitterness, most kinds of anger, guilt, certain kinds of regret. I mean, if you have true regret and it changes your life and it's done with, that's healthy. But if you regret something over and over and, oh, God, why didn't I marry so-and-so, or why didn't I take that job, or blah, 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 blah. Each single time you do that, you generate an emotion. The emotion is destructive to you. Or even sometimes when you have a thought that creates a positive emotion, that definitely is not destructive to you, but it is not as rich or alive as you can be if you learn to stay deeply in the present moment. And when we have no idea how physically healthy we can be if we stay in the present moment, because as we do, we become connected to everything. We become connected to that inpouring, let's call it, universal intelligence, universal energy. And it is incredibly nourishing, and it radiates from us. It literally, we can transmit it, not only intentionally through our hands or with prayer in the act of healing, but we literally, it's an emanation from our state. In my case, that emanation almost immediately stops fear in people. They just stop being afraid. And that's because I faced a great deal of fear at different times of my life and learned how to make a very big space for it. And so there's something in my field that helps other people stabilize when they're in dealing with frightening situations or threatening times. So emotions are created by thoughts, and if people understand that, then you can say, I'll be responsible for my thoughts. The problem is people aren't responsible for their thoughts. They believe them. You listen to a Republican arguing with a Democrat, the Republican believes his ideology, the Democrat believes his ideology, and all of us suffer because nobody wants the best possible solution using the best ideas from both sides. And so identification with thoughts is terrible, poison.
Well, one of the things I've been joking about in getting ready for this surgery, and, you know, it was a difficult decision, but it was one that everybody agreed was a good choice. But what I've been trying to do, I joke about it, is Shirley Temple healing modality going into this surgery. I've been telling people I am not reading the newspaper. I am not, you know, please, if there's something that needs to be resolved, let's take care of it, because after this period of time, that's it. And I'm watching watching Shirley Temple movies, and I'm just trying to stay very centered and just trying to feel, you know, I've been seeing all of my best friends that give me hugs and love, you know, because I just wanted to be in the right mental state, you know, to go into this, so that it's really a healing transition type of time for me, and it becomes a positive situation. So I don't know.
And you, I think that's very wise. And you could add to it too, which is you could ask the anesthesiologist not to just simply show up at the surgery, but to meet you a little beforehand, and you could just say to him, I want to just look you in the eye, get to know you for a moment as a human being, let you feel me as a human being, and ask you to be there as a professional, but as a human being who's made contact with me, and that'll help. And you can do the same thing with the surgeon, and it actually changes everything.
Well, the funny thing is, you know, we did meet the surgeon, and he was funny. You know, I thought he was going to be this big, serious, you know. He was I will absolutely, I think anyone listening to the show, you can do that. There's a book out by Peggy Huddleston called Preparing for Surgery, Recover Faster. And absolutely, you know, I don't think people realize that we actually have the right to tell the anesthesiologist or surgeon to say something positive and to watch what they say while we're under the anesthesia. You know,
exactly.
I mean, I don't know if it
exactly.
works, but it certainly is a great idea.
Exactly.
You know, because we still are picking that up. So as far as what you see for, well, there's two questions I have for you. One, when was your deepest epiphany in your own life? You talk about how you're able to help people with fear. Now, of course, you don't need to share this, but I'm a curious type, and I always like to know what is the big – it's almost like that – what was that biggest turning point for you? Then, of course, secondly, what you see for the future and would like for the future. We certainly came out of a very big energy transition. People had all of these thoughts that something was going to happen in last December, you know, and I think many of us feel that it's this positive shift and we can all make these big changes if we change how we think.
Yes. If we change how we think and if we stop running away from the difficult feelings. All right, well, this may sound strange, but it's not easy for me to tell you which is my greatest epiphany. I had a dream about the goddess that was maybe 6 or 7 years ago, and from that moment, there's been nothing more important to me. I can't tell you. I can tell you the dream in very brief. I'm being enfolded, almost drowned in the breasts, enormous breasts of this this feminine, archetypal feminine figure. She's much, much bigger than me, and her skin is soil and earth. It falls off. It's like clay. It just falls off like soil and earth. Her breasts are like just gigantic, and she's holding me, just embracing me, pulling her to her, and I feel like I am being lit up with the most powerful sense of aliveness I've ever known, like I'm being electrocuted with beauty. But it is truly just almost overwhelming. And I say to her, how can you be doing this to me? And she says, it is what I am. And that dream, that was an enormous turning point for me because I realized I had been in my dream initiated into connection, direct connection with the divine feminine. And what changed my life 36 years ago was I would call it a realization of consciousness or the one consciousness. And one element of that was also to know that existence, this moment and everything in it, is the Divine Mother. But the energy of the Divine Mother, to come in a dream like that, after that I said, I want to live my life in order to know what it true intimacy with every moment of life is. And I want to love deeply and be loved deeply, but I don't need to be loved without, the most important part is to be loved. And I made major, gigantic changes in my life to release myself out into the possibility of pursuing that, that to me, which is, if I had a choice between having an experience of God or having an experience of profound intimacy with the woman I love, I would choose profound intimacy with the woman I love, because intimacy with her and intimacy with the sky and the air on my body and people is more real to me and more important to me than any form of seeking for God. So that was probably the most recent gigantic epiphany in my life. And there was an earlier one about fear, but probably one's enough. You then asked me something about where I think the future is going.
Well, let's not get there first.
Okay.
I think that's an amazing dream. I just can't skip over that. You know, and it's interesting what you're saying, because I think when someone is actively seeking on a spiritual path, that sometimes the answers do point us back to this world, which is where we are.
Exactly.
And that's
the kingdom of heaven. The kingdom of heaven is right here in front of us, but we don't have the eyes to see it. And the reason is because we're in our heads.
Sometimes I've struggled with just day-to-day things, you know, and because I am somewhat, I can be so creative and untethered, and sometimes I just say, wow, I just want to clean my dishes, you know. And of course, there's a book by, famous Zen master, Nat.
Suzuki Roshi?
Someone will correct me, but one of the first chapters is about, you know, washing dishes as a spiritual practice, you know, things
right.
that are mundane. If you're present, and you know, there are so many things in this world that if you're doing them and participating in them, it's just as important as anything you could do in a spiritual path, you know, whether you work with crystals or you work with, you know, oracle cards or talk to the ascended masters, you know, what you're doing here. Because I just remember a lot of that back, you know, in the late 80s, that's what people were talking about. I really agree with you that what we do here, the self-mastery and the experience is so important.
It's essential. You know, if we don't learn how to be profoundly intimate with each other, how are religions going to be intimate with each other? As I said earlier, how are the Democrats and the Republicans and the liberals and the conservatives, how are they going to find the way to take the best from each and create the very, very highest possibility for all of us? Why are they so identified? That, you know, why is a word like socialism in our country such a scary word when you see that the happiest people in the world practically have strong socialist-oriented governments? And I'm talking about the Norwegians, the Swedish, the Danish.
I believe that we're headed in a direction of collaboration, especially I think in business, in, you know, the whole, I'm very much into marketing, digital marketing and social media. I felt compelled to go back to school, of all things. And I'm understanding now that the world is changing. We're better able to find like-minded people. And I think we're moving away from a competitive paradigm so that people can move away from their positions toward agreement. And it sounds like that's similar to what you're saying, is that we, you know, and I also had this epiphany when I was angry at my husband one day that, you know, getting along with my husband is as important as my spiritual studies. You know,
what you do to, you know, Jesus said that, what you do to the least of these, you do to me. I mean, getting along with my partner, getting along with your husband, those are the things that, I mean, it's, what is it that would stop us from getting along? The stories we tell ourselves.
Right.
What is it that would stop us from getting along? The feelings, the deep connectedness and intimacy can sometimes bring up that are really threatening, really scary. Fear, the feelings of abandonment, fear of betrayal. Just inexplicable kinds of stuff that comes from early in our childhood, that's embedded in who we who we are at an ego level, and that all of that can be brought into consciousness and changed. All of that can be brought into consciousness and worked with in marvelously creative ways. If you say to yourself, what my life is consecrated to is to learn to become the most loving human being I can possibly be, so that all beings thrive, so that my family thrives, so that my marriage thrives, so that my husband thrives, and my children thrive, and my community, and so forth. And, you know, that way of thinking, strangely enough, is not very common. You know, that there's too much, and certainly in the United States, the me orientation, you know, my success, my wealth, my home, my house. And in nature, if you look out just in your backyard, of course, backyards tend to be, you know, sculpted by our minds and our likes, which is lovely. But if you go out into the wilderness, and I've spent an enormous amount of time in, well, enormous is relative. I've spent a lot of time in the wilderness. I spent a couple of years of my life sleeping out under the stars because I didn't have electricity for a number of years where I lived, and just was too hot to be indoors in the summers. There were 9 summers in about 18, 20 months, 30 months that I slept outdoors. Nature doesn't have a me. Nature only has we. And we human beings, you know, that's that stage of development, which is ego, that we are, you know, only a very few of us are beginning to outgrow, but more and more and more of us are beginning to look at our egos and realize that's the problem. The ego is all about me, mine, you, yours. But nature is about we and us. And the more we as human beings start thinking in terms of we and us, and not differentiating we and us because it's a different religion or a different nationality or a different gender, then we're going to start to create a world that everyone wants to be part of and where everyone can thrive. And the sheer intimacy that will be the sweetness of the intimacy that starts to grow in our lives becomes so much more nourishing than anything you can go and buy in a store. So all you need to buy is the necessities, the bare-bones necessities. You don't have to buy the best, even if you're fabulously wealthy, because it's just a symbol of something that you're putting outside something that really you haven't yet realized in yourself, because the best is always inside of us. That connection to spirit, that connection to the present, that connection with another human being, that deep work to have that connection, which is what my work is really all about, and the work of others, that's where the real fulfillment comes from. I can't get over, particularly since that dream and the decision that I would live my life for the deepest possible intimacy and the choices I've made, how much simpler my life has become. And how freeing it is.
You know, the image that you described sounds like some of the ancient statues of the women, almost like the fertility goddesses. You know, I had a chance to travel to some ancient ruins where the societies were matrilineal, I guess. Mm-hmm. And that's how that's a little bit of the imagery that I was, you know, seeing in my own mind's eye when you were describing that. And, you know, the staying in a sense of joy and love, which should be our natural state, is terrifying to most people and is seems so out of reach. But I'm really interested, you know, your book is so profound. I mean, every paragraph, you know, I think people would have to, just as I will do, is to read it again and to read it again, and to digest. It's not even about digesting it, because you can digest it in your brain, but to think about how to make these kinds of changes is really an undoing versus a doing, isn't it?
Yes, it is. Exactly. We undo the identification with our thoughts and just use thought as an instrument for intelligence instead of as an instrument for our fear or and predominantly thought has been and is continuing to be used predominantly as an instrument for fear. And people might not see it that way, but if you think about it, almost every decision human beings have made for as far back as any of us want to look have been toward whatever we thought would give us security or safety. And if we had some degree of, you know, let's say success, then we were using thought to amplify ourselves, to give us a bigger home or a bigger palace or bigger, better jewels and whatever else. But always the choice for security. And here we are with global warming, because every choice we've made up to now has been basically about making ourselves safe, which meant more energy, more independence, more individual homes, each consuming energy, and on and on. And yet there is no way to be safe until you find your own deep, creative, consecrated relationship with anything and everything that generates fear and security or insecurity in you. And, you know, I help people do that work, and it sets them free. And then I rejoice in seeing their freedom. And then I rejoice in seeing what happens to their lives, because their lives get simpler. They get much more successful, yet they get successful in a way that seems to help the people around them do better. The families become reunited. Relationships that had been badly broken between brother and sister or parent and child, they get renewed. You know, now I'm beginning to see the third generation of people coming to my work, where I can look back and I knew their grandmothers and I knew their parents really well, and now their 20-year-olds are coming, the third generation are coming, and it's astonishing to me and of a profound joy when that happens. I mean, that's not every day, but it is happening, and that's amazing to me and delicious.
It's wonderful. So what do you want, as I knew we would, we'll be getting close to the end of the hour. Again, it's a quiet audience tonight. The number, if anybody wants to get in on this last segment, 888-627-6008, 888-627-6008. Make sure that if you want to listen to this again, you can go to BBS Radio and to the archives, and you can download it as an MP3. And I'm sure that both Richard and myself will be posting our discussion on our various websites and blogs. Mm-hmm. And, you know, the book is called Inside Out Healing. Richard's website is richardmoss.com. There's also a blog on that website and a lot of podcasts and videos and ways that you can continue looking at it. This is to shift your perspective, to look at things in a different way, because I really believe, especially this period right now, you know, 2013, I think many people are feeling frightened and powerless. And, you know, it seems that if you shift your thinking, literally, you can create a sense of inner safety that isn't based on external means, which are fleeting.
My computer just reminded me that you and I are going to be talking. It's just a little late. I just thought maybe people heard that noise, because what you're saying is so important and profound, and I didn't mean to interrupt.
No, that's okay. No, it's we have to look at these. This is a shift in thinking, literally. And, you know, I've often talked on some of the earlier programs. You know, my previous program was called Soul Odyssey. Now I'm calling it Off the Bookshelf, because I'm launching a self-publishing website called Off the Bookshelf. And I'm also trying to focus on teaching writers how to build their platform, because there's so many wonderful voices, particularly those writing in the spiritual genre, and they don't know how to find their tribe. So that's why now the show is called Off the Bookshelf. But we've talked a great deal about how the only thing that you really can change is your thinking, you know, your perspective. And you outline it so well in your book. Do you have any particular takeaways that you would like our listening audience to have? You know, kind of, I mean, I don't want to do the Cliff Note version of, you know, Richard Moss, but just a few things for them to think about.
Just to, and write this down everywhere you can, just you see it all the time. Who I am begins now. What that means is, how am I going to be respond to how I feel right now? Am I going to be a victim, or am I going to write a poem? Am I going to dance, or am I going to curl up alone? If I curl up alone, am I going to pray? If I curl up alone, am I going to blame other people? So probably in the simplest, you know, if I were to just say simplest things, listen to your body, come into your breath, learn how to come back to the present again and again and again. When you hear your mind telling you something that makes you unhappy, ask the question, but what is really actually happening right now? And immediately you won't be in thought, because when we're in the present, there is no thought, but there sure is feeling. And there is perception, and there is sensation, and there is aliveness. And then you can say thank you. Maybe the most beautiful, simple prayer of all, thank you. Just thank you. You know, I say thank you even when I see the stupidity of myself. I say thank you when I catch myself being negative, because I'm saying thank you to the part of me that showed me that I was being negative. I mean, thank you is, to me, among the most powerful, if not the most powerful words there are. And gratitude, which comes from saying thank you a lot, is one of the most just liberating states and feeling qualities we can have. But, you know, this is about work. You can't change yourself without work. I wish you could. I wish we could. I used to believe, because I had such a gigantic awakening and opening and change, and it did change me, but it sure didn't cure me of being egotistical and things like that. I had to keep working on that and still work on that. It isn't possible. You know, you can go to the greatest guru on the planet and have the greatest transmission of energy, and it still will not stay with you unless you do the work yourself. And that work is to come back to the present moment, step away from the thoughts that judge you positively or negatively, that judge others, that judge, you know, that scare you about the future, scare you about the past, and just who I am starts right now, and thank you. Who I am starts right now, and thank you, you know. And changing the conditioning that keeps us out of the present, as I say, practice, practice, practice. It was that old joke, a couple of tourists in New York see this old gentleman walking down the street and say, "Excuse me, how do you get to Carnegie Hall?" And he says, "Oh, practice, practice, practice."
Oh, that's awesome. Well, we are coming up to the end of the hour. I, again, want to thank you so much. This is Deborah Herman, your host. My guest tonight is Richard Moss. He is a wonderful author of many illuminating books. They are treasures. They're not to be read lightly, yet you can read them lightly. You just will probably want to go back and think about them. They are books that can truly ignite change, and that's a gift that you have given to many, many people. You are truly a wonderful example for us, because I can see that you stay in the trenches and continue to learn what it is that you teach, and that's a true teacher.
Well, you know, my definition of a teacher is someone who can learn, and therefore a good teacher is a person who teaches others how to learn. Not what to learn, well, maybe a part of it is what to learn, not memorizing anything. I mean, I had my head, just like you did, filled with the information that you needed to master to be a lawyer or a doctor. No, not that. A person who can learn is a person who can do something they never did before, and then up the road do something again they never did before, so that they have become a person they never knew before, or who it never was before. And that's, you know, my dedication is to help people become their own teachers.
Well, that's a wonderful way to close the show. Thank you so much. I want to remind all of you that you can learn more about Richard Moss on his website, richardmoss.com. Follow his blog. Follow his YouTube. And you also have a Twitter. What is your Twitter?
God only knows. I don't know. I don't know.
Follow him on Twitter.
Okay, and, follow me on Twitter and like me on Facebook. I love waking up in the morning and seeing, there were 3 more likes today. You know?
They like me. They really like me.
Well, it's silly that way. But, you know, I after that Boston thing, I wrote something, and it went viral to 12,000 people. And that was cool.
That is the tool that we have now to be able to share and to connect. Think about all of the great masters, what they would have done with this, right?
Yeah.
It's a blessing. I can't thank you enough for joining me on Off the Bookshelf Radio. Thank you again, audience, for listening.
Thank you, Deborah.
Be taking a short break. You will have archived shows, so you'll probably get to hear this one again. And then I will be back with a live show in a couple of weeks. God bless you all. Thank you again. And learn how to do inside-out healing. Would you like to add anything, Richard?